Today on Movie Rollers, we give you some of our quarantine recommendations. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello all.
And Rashmi, as you pointed out during an earlier take, not in theatres, not in the back of
not
an airplane.
Not in the back of an airplane.
What is going on?
Just at home. But we are drowning in great TV streaming. It couldn't be better, to be honest, in terms of viewing streaming content.
Yeah. It's a good time. It's a good time, as awful as the whole pandemic is. It's a good time to get caught up. And there is the only thing of which there is a lot. Everybody's making do with little, but the only thing of which there's a lot is content.
Yes.
You know, like on Hulu and Netflix and Amazon, and there's QB and,
each channel,
10 other things.
Each channel has its own streaming service.
Quibi, that's a new one, right? That's the Quick Bites.
And that's a Quick Bites.
I haven't watched that. Have you looked at that?
I have not. It's only on your phone, mm-hmm. and it's like 7 to 8 minute things. But I heard, they have some pretty interesting off the cuff kind of shows.
Yeah, well,
little bizarre things.
I heard about it through the tech stuff that I read, but it's a big play by Hollywood to try and get some traction in what they perceive to be the way that entertainment might be going. So,
correct.
We have because I'm addicted to YouTube. My viewing hours are probably 75% or more, Rashmi, would you say, YouTube?
Really?
Yeah, I have a whole bunch of YouTube video channels that I follow. They're all, hyper-focused stuff on, the geeky things I'm into, cars and computers and all that kind of stuff. But I watch more of that than I do terrestrial television. There's some great news on there, so that... But I think they're concerned, Hollywood in particular is concerned, that if they don't get in on this, they'll get left behind. So Quibi, whatever it is. Quick Bites.
Q-U-I-B-I, I think.
Q-U-I-B-I.
Who Quibi?
Knows?
Is that how it's like Quibi?
Oh,
it's like a little...
There you go.
I wonder if it's Quibi like Quibi.
Rashmi's in tune with their marketing department. Rashmi's it's more woke than the rest of us.
Yeah, I think it's Q-U-I-B-I. Yes, it is. Quick Bites, Big Stories.
Yeah, so I think that's free too, right? I haven't checked it out, but I think it is mobile
it's 3 months. It's 3 months free, and then it's $5 a month.
What? Another subscription.
Yeah, I guess 3 months free, though, gives you plenty of time to,
check out if you want to spend another $5 a month. Yeah, this is true. I'm surprised there isn't an ad-supported tier. But anyway, so Quibi.
I mean, they have some big players. They have Jennifer Lopez, the Jonas Brothers, Kevin Hart. They've been able to get a lot of people to do these little shows.
Yeah. No, cool. I mean, again, I think we're in a time of transition. Hopefully we get back to theatres, though. I don't want to watch a five-minute short in a theatre.
Yeah.
Unless it's at a film festival.
Yeah. I just want the pleasure of watching a James Bond movie or a Christopher Nolan movie, a big splashy thing on screen with a lot of people, a communal experience.
Have you just converted Yasdi there, Joe? I heard him mention Christopher Nolan. Or is that just baiting Joe?
No, it's. I don't think he's God, but he is a demigod.
No, but big screen spectacle is a big part of that. So yeah, the Tenet date is holding. As July something, 24th, I think.
Oh, good. Yeah, I hope
day after Rashmi's birthday, so.
Oh.
it's my gift to you, Joe.
I can say.
Although he remembers your birthday as the day before the movie opens.
Correct. It's a good job Christopher Nolan has a movie coming out.
It's a reference point. Sorry, dear. Okay, so We have indeed not been able to enjoy one of our favourite pastimes of going into the theatre. We've switched it with another pastime, which is watching all of this terrific online streaming content. So, I've essentially been watching a lot of what Rashmi watches. Rashmi, you've been watching a ton of stuff and you have some recommendations. Yazdi, you, I know, have done some good homework here and research. So I guess we should start with that part of the podcast. And
yeah, and just to reiterate, we thought we'd do this podcast in two portions. The first portion is things we're watching on the streaming services. And then the second part is actually another one of our pastimes, which is film festivals. And those great folk at Tribeca have actually made available to press a shortened film festival through a library, an online library. So we'll cover some of the movies that we're starting to watch and things that you can also get access to in the second part of the show. So with that, I'm going to kick off with sharing some stuff that we've talked about in previous podcasts. And actually things that we've seen at previous film festivals. And the first of those is a delightful documentary called Circus of Books. It's now available on Netflix. I urge you to watch it. This is a delightful documentary, interesting topic about a young boy who finds out in his adulthood that his parents were the owners of a famous pawn bookshop in Santa Monica. So it's the unfurling of you know, what he believed to be just a middle-class family in LA. And in later life, he finds out that his parents actually ran a notorious bookshop, which became almost part of the gay rights movement and played an important role in that whole change of laws back in the 70s. So 60s and 70s, a great documentary.
Yeah, I saw this with you at Tribeca, I think, Rashmi, and I think the parents in there, they are the most charming people. I mean, they're so charming, and it just completely removes the smut from the porn by making it such a happy, joyful family. They just happen to have made their money by financing a lot of porn at one point and becoming, I think, the largest sellers of gay porn or something, you know, in the early 90s. And it's just fascinating it's at this intersection of religion and belief and culture and
civil
transgression.
Rights.
And yeah, it's great stuff. It's a sweet, sweet movie.
It's a sweet movie. And we couldn't help smiling all the way through. It's just, and the shocking thing about this is that the parents who owned the bookstore are shockingly normal.
Yeah.
And that's so shocking about this shocking topic, in a sense. So, Circus of Books. Yazdi, I think both of you and I loved it.
I saw it too. And I just want to make the comment that it may sound, based on what we've described, like it could be a little fruity and adult, but it's almost family friendly. I mean, other than the subject matter, which is very clearly got some adult themes that are, you know, don't think that this is one that you will put on and worry about the kids walking in and blushing about something inappropriate being shown on screen. Yes, the content is definitely adult in discussion and flavor, but don't feel like it's not a family friendly movie.
That's a good point, Joe. It's very, very family friendly. I think the worst you will see is the back of some DVD covers, which may be suggestive.
Yeah.
But outside of that, there is no objectionable content. And remember, we were saying last time that we could have recommended some documentaries, but documentaries tend to be so dismal and dark. Well, here's one which is not.
Totally,
it's the exception.
Yeah. Okay, and then my next pick for Netflix is something that's been out for quite a while. I think I've mentioned it on previous podcasts. I was glad to see it's back again. I think it went away for a while. It's a, I think there's like 6-episode series, and it's called Maniac. And it stars Jonah Hill and Emma Stone and Justin Theroux. And it's a trippy sci-fi series, which is super interesting. And it's about the use of a drug and what that drug does in a testing facility. But it's kind of more than that. It's kind of fantastical as well. Very interesting. It's funny. It's dark. It's crazy. And it shows Jonah Hill and Emma Stone in many different genres within the series. So Maniac is my second Netflix pick. Yazdi, what else are you watching on Netflix?
So at least five different people told me, and these are people who really like sci-fi and kind of horror-y stuff, and they all told me that I must watch this movie, which actually was shown at either South by Southwest or another film festival earlier this year. I think it was South by Southwest. And it's a Spanish movie called The Platform, and they were just raving about it, and they said it's almost the darker, grittier, more bloody version of Parasite. So that really got me hooked, and I watched it. And the premise of the movie is that sometime in the future, people either voluntarily or as a matter of punishment have to go to this place which they call the hole. And the hole is essentially a concrete structure which has a square hole in the middle. And there are different levels of it. And the topmost level is level zero. And that's where every morning the chefs, a group of chefs, prepare the most delicious meals, and they put it on a platform. And then the platform goes down each level and it waits there exactly for 2 minutes. So and what happens is when you get assigned to one of those levels, and every month your level is going to change. So sometimes you might be on level 7, sometimes you might be on level 200. And if you're on level 200, you're not getting any food because everybody has eaten up the food by the time it gets to level 200. So the whole movie is kind of an allegory for capitalism and how the people at the top are eating up all the food. And it's an experiment, actually. What they want to prove is that eventually people will come up with self-solidarity, meaning they will realize that the only way we can live, all of us can live, is if everybody rations their food and leaves some for someone else. So it has lots to say about capitalism, socialism, etc. And I love the premise. I watched it. However, I hesitate to recommend the movie because at about the halfway point, it becomes unforgivably gruesome, and it kind of, you know, it kind of just goes into this taboo area, and then it just is too gruesome, too bloody. But if that doesn't bother you, it's very unpredictable, it's very philosophical, it's very beautifully realized, it's dark. And by the way, there is an English dubbed version, which I don't recommend. I saw the Spanish one, but both the versions are available on Netflix. So if that's what, you know, gets your juices flowing, then definitely watch The Platform. It's a great, great construction of somebody's creative vision. Go on.
And I remember you saying, Yazdi, it sounds a little bit like Snowpiercer. And in fact, which was also an interesting movie.
Correct.
A few years ago. And actually, Snowpiercer, the TV show, is just about to be released as well on terrestrial television, I think. Yeah, I can't remember what channel. I will find out before the show's up, but I know it's coming soon. So I just saw the ads playing for that. So Snowpiercer, the TV show.
Great.
But the film you're recommending is The Platform.
The Platform.
Okay.
The other movie that I saw when we did our previous podcast recommendations, I tried to make all my recommendations happy ones. And the ones I recommended was the new season of Shaun the Sheep. Well, Netflix also has a full-length feature which just got released, I think, last month, and it's called Farmageddon. And it's a whole hour
farm,
and a half.
Farm with the word.
Farm, like F-A-R-M.
Excellent.
And then Ageddon, yeah. Farmageddon, and it's the cutest thing. Of course it is. And I love Shaun the Sheep. Shaun and the dog, they're just so clever, and they work so well together.
Yeah, that looks like Gromit, but isn't Gromit from Wallace and Gromit. Yeah. Shaun the Sheep is genius. I mean, who doesn't love Shaun the Sheep? I don't think I can be friends with anyone who doesn't like Shaun the Sheep.
Any of the Aardman productions are just
any of the Aardman, magical. You're right, Yazdi.
I don't know how they consistently create these things that are inventive, fun, familiar, and I mean, they're just genius. Love the work they do.
Yeah.
So I want to...
Can I make two other recommendations?
Go ahead.
So they're not necessarily movies that I saw, but they're movies that I absolutely adore, which have both shown up on Netflix recently. And I happen to know, Rashmi, that you absolutely adore both of them as well. So one is Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yes.
Which finally appears on Netflix. And before this Greek director became all famous with the release of...
The Favorite,
thank you. And he won a lot of Oscars. He was making very strange, very obtuse, very dark movies. And he made this movie with Colin Farrell and...
Nicole Kidman.
And what's that guy's name? Barry Keoghan. I think that's the guy who plays
Barry
the boy.
Barry Keoghan, yeah.
And suffice it to say, you have seen nothing like this. Be ready to be very, very disturbed. But ultimately, it's the kind of movie where you will be racking your brain afterwards in terms of what's real, what's not, what kind of rules. The movie makes its own rules and then kind of abides by them. And even though those rules may not make logical sense, within the confines of those rules, the movie makes perfect sense. It's an experience.
It's genius. However, if you find yourself always agreeing with Joe, prepare to be a little bit angry by the end of it, right, Joe?
So here's what I'll say. I mean, Yorgos Lanthimos, his first couple of movies, Dogtooth and The Lobster, there's one more that I think I may be missing there. But
I think he made a movie called The Alps.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea at all. They were very frustrating, very dark and twisted in many ways. This stays on that wavelength. It's not as accessible as The Favourite, which is clearly, you know, him having
fantastic
polished his craft to a point where he felt comfortable. And he also didn't write The Favourite. I think, you know, he wrote and directed all of these. Killing of a Sacred Deer is almost a gem for me. And I say almost because it does still have that Yorgos Lanthimos twist and button-pushing knife in the ribs for me towards the end. But it is actually a fantastic movie-watching experience. So I'm not going to poo-poo on that as much as you think I might have.
So The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah.
And then the other movie I'm going to recommend, and I know we all absolutely uniformly adore it, is The Death of Stalin.
Yes.
Yes. So The Death of Stalin is on Netflix, and you need to drop everything else you're doing and watch this movie. It's dark, dark satire, note perfect, precise, surgically biting humor. It has everything to say about totalitarianism and, you know, greed and stupid people being in power doing stupid
and
things.
And human nature.
It's got a brilliant cast.
Brilliant.
It has
such sharp dialogue and wonderful acting. It's note perfect. Yazdi, great choices. And I just mentioned The Death of Stalin to Joe yesterday as we heard about Kim Jong-un potentially being...
Well, there's something we don't know is going on there. Yeah.
Yes. And I said to Joe, I wonder if there is literally the movie The Death of Stalin going on in North Korea at this very moment.
Yeah. So if he hasn't made it, that's possibly how it's playing out.
Correct. Great choices, Yazdi.
I must say, I'd originally watched the movie while traveling to India, I think, on the plane on a very small screen, and I had seen it in parts. Because I was very eager to see it and that was the only place it was available. But I watched it on Netflix again and man, does this movie hold up so beautifully. It's just, it's so cruelly, cruelly good. So The Death of Stalin. Yes, go on, Rashmi.
Yeah, no, I have a couple of picks from Netflix as well. I mean, the obvious thing for me to do under lockdown, and it's something I wanted to make sure I do before I don't get the chance, is watch the Matrix trilogy. They're all out on Netflix, 1, 2, and 3. So you can watch them back to back full HD streaming. And I know these movies get shown on terrestrial TV a lot with ads and all of that kind of thing, but I love the fact that they're here in their original cinema versions on Netflix, 1, 2, and 3. And all the more because they are making that fourth movie now. I don't know how production is going to go with... all of the coronavirus, but that has been greenlit apparently. So
really,
you know, familiarize yourself with that universe. As disappointing as number three was, I still think one and two, to some extent, are movie classics. But
I think two was my favorite.
That would be the obvious picks for me. But the one I really want to recommend to folks that may have missed this is The Florida Project. That's a movie from a year or two ago with Willem Dafoe and I forget the name of there was a female actress who was some sort of Instagram hero, but the two of them did some and she has some chaotic flowers or something like that. She has some strange name.
Her name is Bria Vinate.
Oh, okay. But she has an famous Instagram name. It's like Chaos Flowers or something.
Something Flowers, you're right.
terrific little movie from Sean Baker, who also made a movie called Tangerine, which I didn't get on, but it was infamous because it was shot all on iPhones. The Florida Project is a very intimate little movie. It's set in a home for... How do I say this politically correctly? It's
people at the lowest rung of the economic ladder.
Thank you very much for saying that without me putting my foot in my mouth. But it's a terrific little movie. It has so many wonderful, wonderful moments, and possibly the best performance that Willem Dafoe has. It's a career best for me, and I think he was really robbed of the Oscar.
Well, he was nominated, but he didn't get it. Yeah,
it's as good a performance as one will ever see from an actor in that movie. So that would be my other pick.
It felt like it was a bit of a comeback for him. He kind of went off the screen, and it felt like The Florida Project really brought him back. And one of the recommendations I was going to make on Amazon is The Lighthouse, which also is a great performance. I love that movie,
yeah.
But I think it's got a great performance by Willem Dafoe. So The Lighthouse is also streaming on Amazon. Just before we leave Netflix, though, I wanted to mention something that's getting a lot of attention, which is Unorthodox, which tells the story of a young Orthodox Jewish girl. I'll call her a girl because she's only 19 years old, living in Brooklyn, who ends up trying to escape from that world. And it's, I think, a four-parter or a five-parter.
And can I just interject there by saying it's not Brooklyn as you know it, but it's Williamsburg, Brooklyn, that very insular Orthodox community, because, it's a different world.
Yes. Yes. So we did watch Unorthodox. Yazdi, have you seen Unorthodox yet?
I have not.
So look, I'm obsessed, fascinated by that community. I think it's also interesting because they've had such a huge number of cases of coronavirus in that region, in that area. And, you know, I think these types of shows give us a window into why it's that way, because the community is so insular. I would recommend Unorthodox. It's not bad. My criticism of it is the time scale doesn't make sense as the story is told. It is actually based on a true story, and Netflix are also showing another 20-minute little segment of the kind of behind the scenes, and that is interesting to watch. I'm going to recommend one more documentary, though, which is called One of Us. And that's actually about three people from that same community. It's a documentary, very hard-hitting, frightening almost, kind of sinister, about three people who try to leave that community and kind of some of the challenges they face. So I would almost watch that as a package if you get the opportunity. So the documentary One of Us, this kind of series called Unorthodox, and then the behind the scenes.
May I just say two other things in terms of recommendations? People always like to watch new things, but I think, as one of the other podcasters mentioned, I think a lot of people find this time being quarantined at home to be sort of a nesting period. They want the comfort. They want to just, you know, see what is familiar to them. And I think two movies which are undisputed classics are right now on Netflix. One is the original Blade Runner, which, you know, even if the story doesn't do much for you, just in terms of the visuals, I mean, everything we are watching in sci-fi movies right now comes from Blade Runner. visually. And then the other movie, which I'm surprised you did not bring up, Joe, shame on you, is Inception.
Oh, no, so I brought that up last week. I would have done it again, but proud on you for mentioning that.
So Inception, you know, for all those of us who have spent countless hours trying to figure out what the hell it was all about, now you have an option of stopping and watching and like, did he move there? Is there something else happening? So you can stop and analyze as you go. And both of those movies are on Netflix.
Excellent. Excellent choice there, Yasti. And the funny thing about Inception is I watched it and had the spectacle of it in the movie theater. I then bought it and watched it multiple times since. And I almost get a different movie every time I see it. So it's layered and complex.
I still don't understand the ending. Joe, you and I have to sit down and talk about it one day. You know for sure?
I don't think we're meant to. It's the classic ambiguous, you know, the trick that the great directors always try and pull on you, right? They kind of leave it open to interpretation. And I think it's a little bit contrived because it's such a trick that the great directors of years, you know, the Hitchcocks and others, the Kubricks have left for us. But still, it works brilliantly.
Okay.
Good choice.
So, sorry, one additional recommendation on Amazon is Hotel Artemis, which we all loved from last year.
And I in particularly really loved Hotel Artemis. It's got Jodie Foster in it. It kind of flew under the radar a little bit. It's really great. It's like this, dystopian future where nothing works. And there are these covert hospitals, which is run by a single person. And these machines do all your surgery. And there's this drug lord. And it's so unpredictable. It just hit all the spots for me. I was all abuzz while I was watching it. You owe yourself to watch Hotel Artemis.
Yeah, I think that movie, the two of you liked that a lot more than I did, but it's really fun. It's got such an unusual tone to it. Mm-hmm. And there is zero predictability in that movie. Like, at every scene, it manages to surprise me in some way, shape, or form. So, yeah, no, good pick there. On my only mention for Amazon Prime Video, there's some terrific stuff, and I could probably spend half an hour talking about what's worth watching there, but there is a whole catalogue of Bond movies that they've released. So we've got these are not in any order, but or even ones that I recommend or don't recommend, but they've got GoldenEye, Dr. No, Die Another Day, License to Kill, Live and Let Die, Man with a Golden Gun, Never Say Never Again, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, and Moonraker, all available for free streaming on Prime. So if there are any gaps in your Bond movie watching, then I would probably wager there's one or two of those that maybe you didn't see. So it's some good stuff there.
Yeah. I mean, even if there isn't a gap, those are classics. I mean,
there's some good ones, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I was surprised to see that, actually. And again, when under lockdown, when stuck indoors, when wondering what to do to kill a bit of time, even if you put them on and kind of watch them half-heartedly while, you know, reading something or making dinner or something, these are great movies to kind of enjoy. You know, it might be sacrilegious to say, but even when you're not got your full attention on them.
Yeah.
Cool.
This a little bit on the tangent, but this morning I was reading an article about, what's his name? He was in
IMDb
Art of Self-Defense,
ready.
The main guy.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh my God, I'm losing my brain. Anyway, Jesse Eisenberg is interviewed, I think, in New York Times or The New Yorker or something. And he, when this whole coronavirus thing happened, he got into a trailer with his wife and kid, and they drove over to Oklahoma. I think that's where he grew up, and he's kind of helping out on the front lines. And, you know, he's talking about the projects he had and what he's doing, and it's a really fun read. But one of the things he mentions is, you know, that one movie that he happened to see during this interim that he absolutely loved, and he thinks it's a shame that everybody will not see it, is the movie we had recommended a few weeks ago, which is Never Rarely Sometimes Always. And he called it out, and I'm like, I wish more people call it out. People need to go watch that film.
Yeah, no, anyway. We had the full review. So a couple of episodes ago, if you missed that one.
Yes.
Cool. All right. So, Rashmi, you were going to tell us a little bit about Tribeca?
Yeah. So this is the time of year where Yazdi, Joe, and I would take our movie vacation to New York, and we would indulge ourselves in 3 to 4 days of being pigs in poop, watching movie after movie after movie. And unfortunately, because of the pandemic, Tribeca made the wise choice to cancel the festival. And instead, what they've done is they've actually put together a great library of some of the movies, the feature length movies, as well as, I think, Yazdi, you were counting when we first came on, over 70 shorts.
74 shorts and about 17 feature length movies.
Yeah, which they've given access to. So we have been sort of ramping up our movie watching over the week. In addition, what Tribeca is doing is they're making available a short a day. And so if you, I think, go in to the Tribeca Film Festival website, right, Joe, you were just doing this before we came on?
Yeah, correct. So I should just clarify, the library that you mentioned is essentially press only. So
yes.
The purpose of that is we'll do a podcast coming up and we'll let you know what we thought were some good picks from that. But unfortunately, they're not available for everyone yet, at least yet. And Tribeca is going to be working out what they'll do. They plan, I think, to do the film festival later in the year if they can make that happen. And the world is compatible with something like that being organized. So we're watching day by day, really, to see what emerges with COVID-19 as it refers to, you know, the film festival circuit. But we'll definitely tell you what we thought of the available programming. But the film a day is available to anyone. If you go to tribecafilm.com and you find the short film a day keeps anxiety away, it's right at the top of the page. You can watch a number of beautiful little short movies that they have put out. They've been curated by the film festival staff, and there's one of them. You know, we're going to be chewing our way through some of these as well, so we'll definitely give you recommendations. But I can recommend, you know, one from April 23rd called Big City. Rashmi and I, you and I watched that. It's 9 minutes long, and it goes under the title of Making Friends on the Short Film a Day Keeps the Anxiety Away section. Beautiful little short films available one at a time to anyone just by logging on for free. There's no charge, there's no access fee, there's no login required. They're just there for everyone to enjoy. And so, you know, do take a look at that, because there are some short film gems. And, you know, these people that make these short films often do it on their own dime. They do it to, you know, develop a talent or showcase talent that they have and hopefully get themselves noted for later on. So support these things. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Yazdi, I know you've been chewing your way through all the shorts in the library. And like we said, we'll do the Tribeca justice maybe in our next podcast. But Yazdi, a few highlights. Give us like three of your favorites so far. And these are not the shorts of the day. These are in the library.
Yeah, and I saw 17 of them, and I kind of naturally gravitate towards the more, not necessarily sci-fi, but more kind of dystopian future world where the rules have changed kind of shorts. And there's one called Jack and Joe Don't Want to Die. And it's sweet. It's maybe a little glib, but I just love the premise of the movie. It's about, you know, people can choose to have their bodies suspended. And if you pay for it long enough, then you can come back, you know, years and years later and get yourself reanimated. And say, for example, you have a horrible kind of cancer, and then you can just suspend yourself for 20 years in the hope that by the time you come back, that a cure has been found for it. So it's a very sweet movie. That's one that I really liked. Another one is one called System Error. which is so low tech in terms of this little computer which is used to kind of man this little shop, and how this computer slowly starts to develop a fondness for one of the, not a sexual kind of fondness, but just a friendship kind of fondness with one of the employers there. It's so low tech, and yet it's very sweet. And then there's another one called Crew Raw, CRU-RAW. And Crew Raw is about literally blood, sweat, and tears in a high pressure, a high-end restaurant kitchen. And the movie kind of predictably goes where you expect it to, but I don't know if either of you saw it, but it's still an enjoyable ride all the same. I'm just amazed by, you know, with so little, how much is accomplished. You know, little budget, little time, little resources. Some of these are very, very well realized. And, you know, I can't wait to see. And some of them could very easily become a full movie. And I hope they are. The filmmakers are only using it as a means to get funding for a full-length feature film based on the same premise.
You took the words out of my mouth, Yazdi. I've watched about seven, three long ones and four shorts. And I haven't seen a bad one yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll save the reviews of the long ones. The one that stands out to me is a small documentary called My Brother's Keeper, which is actually about a Guantanamo Bay ex-prisoner who gets released and ends up becoming best friends with the soldier who basically was assigned to look after him. This is a fascinating documentary. I can't wait to see more, A, from this filmmaker, and I am dying to see the full-length version of this documentary. I hope it gets made. It's a fascinating topic, and it kind of is not quite... Joe, I was asking about the name of the syndrome. It's not
Stockholm
quite,
Syndrome.
It's not quite Stockholm Syndrome, because that's hostages, but it is kind of like being with your hostage. Keeper in a sense, but
I watched this one with you, Rashmi, if you recall.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful story how, despite the circumstances, the connection and the humanity between of you know, the captor and the captive can develop. This guy who was in Guantanamo Bay, you know, was there on suspicion. He hadn't necessarily been convicted or accused of anything. He was just there because of affiliation, and, you know, in a post 9/11 world, as Rashmi mentioned. So the fact that the connection between two individuals, the friendship that can develop under what must be the most impossible of circumstances, is just it's very touching. It's a very, very, very it's all the more remarkable for the fact that it's real and it exists, and that they've, you know, that the filmmakers have brought it to light. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. So full reviews in the next show or the Tribeca show. I've watched Banksy Most Wanted, and if you know me, you know I love Banksy and I'm obsessed by him. Ottolenghi and the Cakes of Versailles. This is a film that was tailor-made for me. It's about cakes, it's about cooking, and it's about Versailles. All set in the backdrop of the New York Met Museum. And then the final one I watched so far is Call Your Mother, which is about comedians' mothers and the impact of what mothers have on comedians. So more about those coming. We did want to do a quick review of a movie Joe and I watched called Potluck, which is actually going to be available on stream. It's actually available now. On Amazon Video, on Apple TV, and Vimeo On Demand. So this is basically a documentary that basically looks at the situation of the cannabis industry in Colorado 5 years on. So Joe, why don't you give us a quick what you thought of this one?
So sure. I mean, it's a really interesting premise, right? With the whole legalization of marijuana in Colorado, I think they were the first state to allow the recreational use of marijuana. And so there have been lots. There's been lots of discussion societally as to what this kind of means, because you know, most people that were for the legalization of cannabis, myself included, were, look, it's not my thing, might be your thing, that's okay. If it's your thing and you want to go home, roll up a joint, you know, have a smoke, that's cool. But what this movie explores is that there are many, many unforeseen consequences, particularly on the law enforcement side. So, and the commoditization of the marijuana trade. So, for example, you know, what seems to be happening in Colorado is that the industry is legal, but it's not regulated well. So they're coming up with all sorts of forms of cannabis available as, like, you know, candy bars and things that may be appealing to children, gummies, and the strengths are not regulated because oftentimes these things are made very, very poorly. So you might have, you know, a packet of, you know, cannabinoid gummy bears, but, you know, they're basically just regular gummy bears that are sprayed with, you know, a THC containing compound, and it's not done in a very controlled manner. So some might be very strong, some might be not very strong. So there's all sorts of issues that come with that. And so the movie's a little bit disjointed in the sense of, I don't think it has a strong narrative in it. It's not taking a position. It's just a very open-minded look at different sides of the argument for and against the legalization of cannabis in and where we are today. So, you know, would I say it forces a particular opinion on you? No. But what it does do is it engages in the kind of debate that I think everyone that's ever talked about whether or not this should be legal has had. And, you know, I was left with the sense of, can't really tell yet if it's a good or a bad thing, but my main sentiment coming away from it is we do need to think a little bit more deeply about, you know, when we legalize pot, you know, we don't regulate the strength, you know, but for example, alcohol, you know, you're not allowed to have alcohol sold above a certain strength, right? So we do regulate how much alcohol can be, you know, in a bottle of spirits, for example. We don't do that with cannabis, and you know, that's potentially dangerous. You might be looking to try it, experience it for the first time, and inadvertently pick up something that's super strong, you know, lots of things like that. So it was competently made, and really just I would say it was more of an exploration rather than a discussion of some of the issues.
I agree with you, Joe. I think it's a really well-crafted documentary that presents lots of information. I think it would have only been made better if there had been more of a narrative and a story with a definite point of view. I think it does a good job of staying right in the middle and presenting pros and cons. And I almost wish that it had pushed one way or the other just to give it a bit more bite. But definitely really opened my mind to being and asking more questions of something. Like you said, it seems really easy, right? If you want to smoke a joint in your house, go smoke a joint. And it seems that easy, but it did bring up all of these unforeseen
consequences.
Issues that I'd never thought of. I mean, do I want, like, you know, a big fat billboard with, you know, a pot leaf on it right outside my window? No. Just even stuff like that. And then even the cross, you know, the sort of the state lines, how the state lines work in the US and sort of the repercussions of that.
As a thought-provoking piece of film, it really does do the job of putting those issues out on the table and, you know, getting us all to think about it more deeply. So, yeah.
Yep. So Potluck. And again, it's streaming on Amazon, on Apple TV, and Vimeo On Demand. So you can watch that right now.
Okay.
Good stuff. No, thank you, Ashby, for bringing that up. All right, should we wrap things up for today?
Yes, I think, yes, you had one more thing about South by Southwest.
Yes, so I think every film festival is struggling right now in terms of, you know, how to best deal with the situation we find ourselves in with the pandemic. And I think just like like, for example, all the Asian Film Festival, the Latino Film Festival, they were all canceled. And just like the Tribeca Film Festival, the South by Southwest Film Festival has, you know, they had to cancel the real film festival. And at the same time, they didn't want to just completely shut the door on the films and the content that, you know, it represents so much heartache and years of work on the parts of so many filmmakers. So as a test, the South by Southwest Film Festival is going to make some of the content available for free. And as a matter of fact, as of Monday, April 27th, a lot of this information is going to become available. So, you know, if by the time you're listening to this podcast, it's past April 27th, 2020, then definitely just do a Google search for South by Southwest Online Film Festival, and you'll be able to find all kinds of movies. And I think normally you have to pay a hefty price and kind of, you know, use your elbows to kind of literally elbow into a large group of people to watch some of these movies that are being shown for the first time. And now anybody has access to this. And, you know, more often than not, you'll find gems. And I should also say that as an experiment, before they were going to release a significant portion of this content online free to everyone, in the month of April, I did not know about this. I just found out a few minutes ago. In the month of April, if you have a paid for Amazon Prime account, then there is a South by Southwest 2020 channel within Amazon Prime, which has about 12 films. So, you know, you can go and watch them with your Amazon Prime membership as well. So
I didn't know that. That's awesome. Fantastic.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So plenty of things to watch. And I think, again, as horrifying as coronavirus is, I think one of the good things is that there's been so much free artistic content which has become available during this time, so people can enjoy things from the comfort of their home. And you can always watch that James Bond movie again. And I do recommend you watch those early, cheesy, fun, just lovely Bond movies, but also save some time and watch some unusual, challenging content from film festival.
Brilliant stuff.
I think we've talked your ears off now.
We have. Yes. Thank you for tuning in to Movie Rollers. Hopefully you found some entertainment of merit in this. We'll do our best to capture some of these points in the show notes. So Yazdi and Rashmi, if you could do that me a favor and send me those links, I'll put them in when I publish the podcast. So excellent stuff. It's not been as bad as it could have been had we, you know, it wasn't, you know, it's a social apocalypse in many ways, but, you know, we have such great technology now. I can't imagine coronavirus 20 years ago, where we didn't have live streaming and other ways to stay entertained at home. Gosh, we'd have had to maybe talk to each other, Rashmi. God, didn't even think of that. Yes, wonderful to have all this stuff available. And, keep listening, keep watching, stay healthy. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.